Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, July 5th, 2013. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number four, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hey, Carla and Jim, how are you doing today?
Doing well.
Just fine. Do you know, Monica, we got our garage doors working for the first time in 7 years.
It feels so good. First time in 12 years.
Well, good.
Years. 12 years. Didn't realize
I know
that
what that's
long.
Like. I've been through that. You got them fixed or did you get new ones?
We're so happy not to have to change everything, but that the old ones
still work.
They're normally white, but since they've been in a horizontal position for over a decade, they're a kind of a golden brown right now. Dust.
Except for the cow.
That's over a dozen years of dust. Yeah, and there's some cat footprints.
Cat prints.
Artistically done.
But Jim says he's going to wash it all off and then paint it white, so it'll be just as good as the rest.
Okay, good.
He painted everything white, all of our trim, even the foundation up to where it begins to be brick. So I'm feeling mighty good about our house. Golly, it's nice to have all that done.
Oh, I know the feeling. We finally got some work done on our house over the last couple of years and stuff that we'd been putting off for like 10 or 15 years in some cases. So I definitely know what that feels like. We've actually been here 30 years, so
things do pile
up. Really? Exactly?
Yeah, we moved in 1984.
Oh, wow. Same year. That's wild.
<Isn't it?
laughs> That's exactly right. Okay. Did you have any quick announcements or you want to go straight to the riff?
Well, the only announcement I have is that we are now open to accept people that might want to come to the homecoming. It's from
Labor Day weekend.
It's over Labor Day weekend. I think it's the 28th through the 1st. That might not be exactly right. It might be the 29th through the 1st. At any rate, it's over Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and if possible, if people want to stay Monday of Labor Day weekend, which is the first, Monday in September.
Right.
So it's easy enough to find. Anyway, if you go to bringforth.org, you can find it right on the homepage. You can see the announcement and find out how to join us. And if you wish to do that, please do it as soon as possible because we're not filled up yet by any means, but it happens really fast. People sign in as soon as it's August, and all of a sudden there's only, two places left, one place is left, and then it's gone. So it's good to do it as soon as possible. Get your reservation in and make sure you're part of the homecoming. Oh, it's nothing like it. It's wonderful.
Okay, very good. All right, I'm going to go to our opening riff tonight, which is from Kuo, from the Aaron Kuo Dialogues, page 382. And, of course, this is available at llresearch.org. You perceive the illusion that this self that is aware is separate from that of which it is aware, and you begin to believe God is out there, and thus begins your journey. The only way out is through, which is through the illusion of separation. This illusion is not a burden that you must carry, but a gift. Would you remain that small spark forever, or would you blossom into a brilliant sun in your own right? The passage must involve a journey. That first self-awareness is part of the gift. At some point, awareness notices itself being aware. And with that first notice, there is a shift. There is something which feels itself to be aware. At that point, awareness chooses a direction in which to begin evolution. I emphasize begin because nothing is ever fixed. You do not move into a path and stay on that one limited path until eighth density. There is always choice. Some of you will choose material planes, and some will choose non-material planes. I will explain later in this weekend some of the factors in that choice. For now, it is sufficient to know that there is a choice. There are innumerable planes, both material and non-material. In some planes, you have only spirit and mental bodies. In other planes, there may also be an emotional, and if it is a material plane, a physical body. The earth plane is the only present material plane that has a foundation of positive energy and love, and in which all four bodies are brought together. As such, it is a very powerful experience. Time is not the factor that leads one into the emphatic learning experience of the earth plane, but rather a deep aspiration to learn. Some beings choose to move into that earth plane immediately. Others, for one reason or another, are led in different directions. Later in the weekend, we will talk about some of the material and some of the non-material planes where beings evolve. What is a wanderer on the earth plane? As simply as I can put it, it is a being that has begun its evolution on a plane other than the earth plane, and at some point in its learning has made a decision to incarnate on earth. It may have been in a physical form before on other material planes, or it may have existed previously only on non-material planes.
Thanks, Monica. I think the first time I really thought about being a wanderer, so-called, or somebody that is from elsewhere, is in college. Somebody told me, one of the guys that thought he was pretty psychic and tended to give out with very psychic announcements, he announced to me one day as I was having lunch in the quad that my mother was from Venus, but my father was from Mars. I thought about it, and it kind of felt right. And then I thought about coming from Mars and Venus. How would that work? And was he talking about, was he talking literally or was he talking figuratively? Could be figurative, you know, in that I had a very assertive masculine side that I'd inherited from my father, my Mars father, and a loving, gentle side that I had inherited from my Venus mother. Didn't fit with my folks who were both from Mars. So I figured it had to be not literal but figurative. And if it was figurative, did I like the idea of coming from Mars and Venus? And I decided I liked the idea of coming from Venus. Wasn't crazy about coming from Mars. Now, I still don't know precisely from which planet I come, although I suspect it is Venus, because of my love of the raw material and Ra, who comes from Venus, as that group says it does. Feels good anyway. At any rate, in 1981, when I began channeling the Law of One material, the Ra group, who was having this conversation with Don that comprises the 106 sessions of the Ra material, talked a lot about wanderers and how they had a difficulty in fitting into the earth plane. And the more I have gone on in this life, the more I think that that handbook is for everybody. Not that everybody comes from elsewhere. I think there are people that, you know, may have come from elsewhere a long time ago. Ra talks of 75,000 years ago, those of Mars coming into our planet to finish third density. They speak of those coming from Maldek. They speak of those coming from 16 different planets because their third density was interrupted and they had to find a place to finish out the lessons of third density in this school of souls that the Ra describes. We're all in third grade and we're hoping to graduate in the fourth. So what is it to be a wanderer on Earth? Well, firstly, there's a realization that we don't fit in. We're not entirely comfortable with planet Earth, with its vibrations. We're not as interested in some of the things the culture is as other people might be. We don't fit in. We're isolated. We're naturally isolated. We're not intending to. We don't try for it. We just are different. A lot of wanderers are keenly aware that they don't belong here and identify with coming from elsewhere, and they talk about looking up at the sky, wondering where their home might be. A very lonesome thought, but very real, and many people have written in and said that. Wanderers often have allergies, and the allergies are supposedly because there's a very deep rejection of planet Earth on the unconscious level. The body has a very hard time fitting in here, thriving here. There are many illnesses that wanderers are prey to, often allergies, but sometimes many other things as well. I could go on and on about being wanderers, but the chief things are isolation, feeling of being different, and a real feeling that home is elsewhere, that there's another way of being that doesn't hurt people, that doesn't make them sad and angry, doesn't kill people in pursuit of national policy. There's a feeling that this whole idea of killing people that we call war is wrong. And it's not the same thing as thinking, you know, the politics are wrong, I'm going to be an activist and all this. It's just an instinctive feeling that there's a better way, a loving way, and a bewilderment that people don't want to live that way. Wanderers are very often beat up emotionally by the time they get to be adults. They've had to build a defense around themselves mentally and spiritually. Because they can be hurt so easily, they have to defend. So in addition to feeling isolated, they welcome that feeling in that they want to defend themselves against people hurting them by what they say. And one part of homecoming that's so wonderful here at L&L Research is that it attracts wanderers by the dozen. And people find here that there's nothing they can't talk about and be safe. It's a safe place. People accept you for who you are. There's no question to ask. Nobody is sitting there with a judgment going, tick, that fits, tick, that fits, tick, that doesn't fit. Uh-oh, she doesn't fit. We won't like her. Everybody likes everybody. It's a rule. It doesn't happen because of the rule, I'm just joking. It happens because people are so glad to be in a safe atmosphere, and they're very glad to extend that safety to others. So it's an explosion, that feeling of home, that feeling of this is the way we ought to live all the time. I can't express how much joy happens around homecoming. People get high and they stay high, and there's no substance abuse. I'm not talking about using alcohol or drugs. I'm talking about being high on each other, being high because you're welcomed, because you're accepted, because you can talk about the things you love. It's really wonderful. I can't wait for it. Jim can't wait for it to be over. He's a loner. He's a wanderer. He's a beautiful. He's more a wanderer than I am. I like the people more than he does. But, you know, when they're here, when it's happening, he always says, okay, it's worth it. It's worth it. But he's still glad when everybody's gone and he can have the house to himself once again. I must say that's true. At any rate, what they're saying here is that we have choices about how we want to live. We don't have to do a certain thing in order to be perfect. It doesn't matter about being perfect. We get to choose every time we come to a choice point how we're going to respond. Fortunately, Ra gives us many, many indications of how to respond if we want help. The key word in his guidance of response is love. And I have found the closest thing to it is the prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, union. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, teach us not so much to be loved, but to love. Not to be understood, but to understand. Not to be consoled, but to console. For it is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in giving that we receive. And it is in dying that we rise to eternal life. The Ra Group also has wonderful guides to how we make our choices. He basically encourages us to look for love. He says there are four basic ways to look for love, the truth of that love. Number one, there's love in the moment. Where is that love? That's your job at every situation. And you follow that love. Number two, look into the mirror. See the Creator. Number three, look at another self. Ra calls each person a mind-body-spirit complex. See the Creator. Look around you in the world of nature. See the Creator. Beautiful guidance to live by. I wish you good luck, and if being a wanderer kind of strikes home to you, don't worry. You're not just one among a few. You're one of many. I wrote a wanderer's handbook as a way of helping out wanderers who awaken and go, my gosh, I don't come from around here. What do I do now? Why the heck did I come here? This is hard. It is hard. So I wrote a big book called A Wanderer's Handbook, and my thought was, you can look up what you need to look up. I wrote it in bits. I divided it into chapters. It's very logical the way I organized it. But I started out taking down the questions from what people asked me when they said they were wanderers in my email. Through about 10 years, I collected emails from wanderers, and then I went through it. And I got 106 questions that people ask over and over and over again. And I wrote the book answering each of those 106 questions, and I labeled all of them. So you can find the topic that you want to read up on and look right at it. Now, most people read it through anyway, but you don't have to. It was designed to be able to be read bit by bit. And I recommend it to you. You can get it for free online. You can get all our stuff for free online. And if you think you're a wanderer, please try. Please try that and use the search to find out what you'd like to find out therein. Because it is very easy. There's a big table of content, so you can find yourself that and then just scroll down and find the page number. Okay. I think I've talked enough about that to give you an idea of what a wanderer is. I want to welcome you to Earth. I'm a wanderer too. It's not so hard once you get the hang of it.
Thank you, Carla. Jim, did you have anything to add to that?
Only that it helps a lot to have a friend, especially a mate that's willing to work with you on this path, or at least a good friend that you can talk to. A lot of the folks that we hear from that feel like there might be wanderers are in a situation in which they're isolated. So it makes it difficult for them to be able to talk at a real heart level about what concerns them. And that's why we have our Bring Forth site with the various forums that people can utilize to talk to other wanderers that might be in the same situation so that you can find a friend. Friends help a lot.
Definitely, that's for sure. Well, now that you've explained about wanderers, maybe this next question has to do with walk-ins. I'm going to go ahead and read the question, and maybe you can explain the difference between a wanderer and a walk-in. Okay, this is from Jim. In my personal session with Kuo, they stated that my original soul has remained in my body and shares this with another walk-in soul. Would you care to speculate as to why my original soul stayed to accompany my second soul? And also, how rare do you think it is for someone to be in my position? That is, a human being occupied by a sixth-density wanderer and a sixth-density walk-in. Okay, this is from Jim.
Not me.
Hey, Jim. Hey, other
Jim.
My husband.
Different Jim. Sorry.
It is extremely rare, Jim, for that situation. Being a walk-in in the first place is very rare, and if the guy that told you this is accurate, you may be one of a kind. And it may be, you know, confusing. Now, I wish you luck with that. It doesn't mean it's not true. I can't tell you myself. I'm not psychic. I can't, you know, go into the ethers and find the answer. But I can say it's very rare. Usually what happens is that the original soul, you, coming into this incarnation, take a good look at the higher level, mind you. You may not be aware of it. Takes a good look at what he came in to do and despairs. Despairs to an extent that it's incarnational. And that original intention matches the desire of somebody from elsewhere who would like to use your body and see if he can accomplish your goals, not just for you, but also for that other person who's going to walk in. Abraham Lincoln is probably the most famous walk-in, for instance. He changed abruptly from somebody that was just a small-time lawyer in Illinois to somebody who wanted to be president. So it probably took place in there somewhere when he was grown.
1853.
Thank you. He may not have known it consciously. It may have taken place entirely at the subconscious level. But whatever, Ross says it's entirely rare, much rarer than being a wanderer. And that the goal is the goal of wanderers, and that is to serve. So good luck with it. May you serve, as all of us hope to serve.
Just a little clarification. I had heard from Jim through a private message that this was actually from Kuo, from one of the channeled sessions, that he had asked a question and was told by Kuo that he was not only a wanderer but a walk-in, and that both souls were still residing in the same body. And I think what he's asking is, you know, is it rare for the souls to both still be there? Because usually in a walk-in situation, the first soul leaves, right?
Right. But and that self has left, and it's sleeping. The Ra group says that the original soul is sleeping and waiting for the body to die and the soul to move on. And at that point, he will awaken and try incarnation again. But so the rare but possible thing is for the walk-in to happen in the first place, and it's not too rare, as I said, to be a wanderer. What's rare is that the wanderer decided to stay awake. I find that very, very rare, and I would say almost unique. I don't see, however, that it causes any real problems, because the goal of both entities is exactly the same. By definition, it's exactly the same. The walk-in agreed to do what the original soul intended, and the wanderer who set those goals So the walk-in has agreed to help all he can to achieve those original goals. Now, for the entity to stay awake, that's unusual. So I don't think, however, that it keeps the basic purpose of the incarnation from being as it is. And I think that you will be, you won't find yourself confused, because the goal of both entities that, I mean, if the walk-in is still, I mean, the wanderer is still alive, still it's the walk-in who's working on the incarnation. That is, you know, if the walk-in is still awake, still he's not trying to affect anything other than what the walk-in is attempting. So either there's a partnership there, a happy partnership, or the walk-in simply remained awake and is an observer.
Okay. Did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
No, just that it's extremely rare. It's something that we've never really heard of before.
Okay. This next question is from Adonai 1, 1 as in the number 1. Are most social memory complexes hive minds? I've come to the conclusion that many individual human wanderers of a social memory complex, a very united one at least, will be a direct manifestation of all who is within the complex. So it seems social memory complexes never leave their wanderers, even as they incarnate here, for they are them. The collective choice to wander has led to the manifestation of their incarnations, their every thought and choice they make. And when such a wanderer returns, every choice is merged and experienced by the collective, perhaps even as the incarnation is underway. All things are experienced in unity, a true hive mind, a true singular being that is never truly split, even as it puts part of itself into incarnation. A mature social memory complex isn't really a group, but an individual of relatively massive proportions comparable to the Creator himself. It seems as creation gets to know itself, spiritual mass grows in this way. We continue to take experience from more and more of creation, and it adds to us to where we inevitably end up as the Creator. Is this correct?
Okay. No, and yes. It is correct in some ways. It is incorrect in a very serious way that needs to be addressed. It is incorrect in that social memory complexes are not hive minds as I understand them. They have not all formed into one being. They retain their individuality. Where they come together is on their intention. They come together in one intention. They agree to become a clan, part of the social memory complex as a whole. In other words, an entity that wanders here from the Ra group is not the Ra group. It is a wanderer that contains that goal of the wanderer, the group from which the wanderer came as a whole. It retains that one intention, which is service. Comes here to promulgate that service. And it has the opportunity to do that in incarnation. But it contains the oversoul of its social memory complex. So as a representative, it retains its individuality. And it carries with it the oversoul of the social memory complex's clan, which is not the entire group of Ra or Hatan or whoever. It is a clan within that group that formed an intention in service. Now, That being understood, it is true that social memory complexes never leave their wanderers. That oversoul is always there and can be called upon very quickly. Now, we who are wanderers come from a social memory complex, and we are also capable of asking that the higher self, shall we say, of that social memory complex and the higher self of that clan, as the clan has worked together, it becomes one being in that it retains one oversoul or one higher self. So you have your higher self as an individual, but then you also have the higher self of the social memory complex from which you came. And then you also have the higher self of you as an individual. So you have both. You have the individual higher self. You have the higher self of the group from which you came. And you've got friends, you know, on the other side. So you've got that one friend on the other side that is as close to you as breathing and is easily accessed, just the way we can very easily access the spirit within when we want to. And it's also true that when a wanderer returns, the choices are merged and experienced by the collective. So, you see, the truth here is very very much intertwined with a subtle untruth, the untruth being that a true hive mind is like clones, one being repeating itself over and over, like bees. They have very little mind, but the mind that they have is one hive. They have a hive mind. That's not what you get when you get a social memory complex backing you up. You get everything that all of the individuals of that agreed upon clan have thought or thinking, will think, you know, all of that for each one of them. And it's all one huge person, because in higher densities, everything is known. The people that you come into a clan with, you agree to follow one intention together, coming to Earth, whatever. But you retain your individuality completely. It's just that that individuality is known, just like you know what other people are, their good side, their bad side, what you might consider their shadow side. Everything is known. Nothing is judged. Everything is accepted. And meanwhile, everybody is trying real hard to, you know, use their incarnation to further evolve. The evolution of mind, body, and spirit continues on all of the densities until such time in the seventh density, the density of forgetting, where the entity simply says, I don't care about anything but just going back to the Creator, and that begins to pull that entity back into the Creator, because that entity has become love and simply wants to return to the source of all love. Let me see if I can answer any of this and any more. I need to look through it here, so give me a minute. I liked what you said about a mature social memory complex isn't really a group, but an individual of relatively massive proportions. I like that. It's not comparable to the Creator itself. There's nothing comparable to the Creator itself. The Creator is beyond any definition. But it's certainly comparable to a very powerful thing. I mean, look at it this way. When two people get together, their energy is doubled. When three get together, that energy is doubled. When four people get together, follow this math here, 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4, double 4 to get 8, double 8 to get 16. But just 4 people getting together, you got the energy of 16 people. Now, if you'll follow this doubling, one more adds 32. You get 32. Another one more, 6 now, get to the energy of 64 people. If you happen to have one more than that, 7 people, you're at 128. And I don't want to trust my addition any longer than that. But you see the drift. You get a really big social memory complex together with a million individuals in it, and the power is incredible. So it is awesome to think about the magical personality of a very large social memory complex that has set its intention upon one thing. I don't know how big one of those clans is. Big, thousands of people probably. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I was just going to say there were 32 million on Venus that graduated into what we call the social memory complex of Ra. So that's a pretty good size group.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to mention was that I think that as we go further on in the densities, 4th, 5th, 6th, and as you mentioned, 7th, that more of this becoming as one being manifests, that in 4th density, for example, at the beginning of it, it takes a while for the new members of 4th density to learn how to shield themselves from being seen by the physical apparatus of the 3rd density. You know, they have to be able to be invisible in order to inhabit a planet that is also going to be 3rd density. So that's why Earth is not going to be 3rd density for a while until the new 4th density population can learn that. And there's other blending of their vibrations into a nearer unity that occur, I believe, throughout the 4th density experience, and that this continues to be refined in the 5th and the 6th until, as you said, in the 7th, there's the total desire to return again to the Creator as, you know, that one single unified being with no difference whatsoever. I think the Hindus have descriptions of the what we would call a nirvana experience, that that certain of the unitive experiences are with difference. You still feel there is a difference between you and the Creator, and some are without difference. And I think this expresses itself as we go further on in the densities.
Yeah. Are you done?
Yes, I'm done.
Okay, well, I was reading into the part of the question that Monica didn't actually read because it would just go on too long. But she basically was saying, I think it's a she, could be a he, that whichever, brother or sister, I'm with you. I love you. Thank you very much for this letter.
He's a he. He's a he.
I'm sorry, what?
Go ahead.
I wanted to say that to hold the ego in disgust is a misunderstanding in and of itself, because the ego is misnamed. The ego is derived from the rather crazed ramblings of Freud, who thought that we basically all were looking for sex. It's really a strange way of looking at our drives. He thought everything, you know, boiled down to the desire for sex. Well, it doesn't. Excuse me. But if you look at people that are sitting within their lower chakras, their first three chakras, and are content there and have not yet opened their hearts, it's not a bad description. So as we become magical beings, we have less and less of a so-called ego, because we have begun to choose things that have nothing to do with the physical. We have begun to choose non-material goals as our main goals. We have begun to wish to be instruments of His peace, as it were. We have begun to wish to be filled with love and compassion, and to stop the energy of karma. Forgive, forgive, forgive. All of these things are higher vibrational, non-material goals. And Freud would not know what to do with these things. He would lose his punch entirely if he tried to talk about them. And as he did try to talk about them, he was stuck. So that's my opinion. Other people think Freud is completely right, and I don't mean to worry anybody, but we can agree to disagree. And I agree with you that you are already merged to some extent. You're merged with everybody who thinks as you do. And that's the magic of homecoming. There is a central intention to learn and to serve. That's a magical intention, to learn and to serve. That's part of the definition of being a magician. And so it's wonderful to see the magical part of everybody just supported at homecoming, so it can bloom, and it really does bloom wonderfully. I think you'd really enjoy homecoming, because I love your thing, though, about roaming the universe. I think that's great, and wouldn't it be wonderful to do? But an ego, of course, would totally get in your way, because, you know, it causes you to so skew your perceptions that you would think that everything is about you. And everything is indeed about you in that all are one, but, you know, how can you go through viewing the universe and seeing the wonders of all the different densities and all the different experiences that you would have, and then trying to bring it down to the level of the flesh? It can't be done. So you would lose all the non-material sensations and nuances that otherwise, you know. So no, the energy of the ego is the energy of the lower chakras, and insofar as you've opened your heart, you've already begun to merge with those who want to learn the ways of love. And I consider all of us who are working on the open heart to be brothers and sisters of the open heart. And we are all merged to that extent that our intentions are the same. So I thought I would add that in there, because I think it's a part of understanding how a social memory complex gets to be one, and how it can form itself into a clan that has one goal, and that is to serve, as those of Ra set themselves to serve by coming among us of Earth and raising the planetary vibration. When we awake.
Yeah, I just have. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Monica.
Just a follow-up question I just got to ask. So we're not going to be like bees. Will we be like the Borg?
No, that's a hive mind, too.
That's pretty much being used, right?
Everything is subdued. Everything is lost. No personality whatsoever. And just the hive mind, just obeying the leader who has retained her own mind that denies it to everybody else, so that everybody can do her bidding and nobody else's. So it's a perfect example of a service-to-self entity who has nothing but slaves and is not interested in any of them, just what they can do for her. Positive densities are not like that. Positively oriented people are not like that. We wouldn't dream of stepping on each other's physical, mental, or emotional differences. We appreciate and love each other's eccentricities. We get off on it all. You know, we would not want to lose one iota of somebody else's ability to color that light that's coming through, so we all become stained glass windows rather than just letting the light shine through as a light, as a white light. You know, we color that light with our personalities. Oh, good heavens, no. That's the last thing we would want to do to each other. No, we will not become as the Borg, Monica. We will simply become a lot of stained glass windows that have a lot in common.
So do you think the Borg is a good depiction of an STS, social memory complex?
Perfect, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be as a negative guy on Earth would want everything to be. Everybody is his slave. That's what he's trying to do. A negatively oriented leader is trying to make everybody his, you know, instrument of his will.
But someday the followers of that person want to become leaders of their own, and there are challenges to the power of those above them so they can rise in the ranks, and I don't think Borg ever did that.
Right, so it's not like the Borg. But it's the desire of everybody that everybody else would fall in line like the Borg.
Right.
There would be some method of bringing everybody into the fold in such a way as that they lost everything except the necessity of serving the head.
quick tangent. Do you know anything about, I heard a story that Gene Roddenberry had been given the Law of One information somehow. Do you know anything about that?
I do, actually. Gene Roddenberry saw the same information that Don did when Don started a meditation group because he wanted to test those theories out that he had read in the group from a group called the Detroit Group, or they, as they named themselves later, Man Consciousness and Understanding. Very good group at pre-Ra, you know, much simplified. And splinters of that group broke off, and Hatton became Lord Hatton, and Oxal became, it was given a military title. Everybody was given military titles, and then they started channeling very negative stuff. So, but if you get this original information, which we do have on site, honoring those that came before us, and you'll find that Detroit Group information of Man Consciousness and Understanding. The Brown Notebook, he saw that Brown Notebook. He saw the same information, and it talks about the first law is free will. It talks about the Creator, the infinite Creator. He saw that. And Star Trek, with the Confederation, that the first law is free will, is completely taken from the Confederation of Angels and Planets in the Service of the One Creator, the Ra Groups and Hatton's Confederation. Kind of neat, huh?
Oh, I've always thought it was so cool. In fact, I used Star Trek as my character-building curriculum for my son when I was homeschooling my son. I took it that seriously. I'm like, oh, my God, this is totally the Law of One right here. Well, not totally, yeah. But, you know, a lot of the concepts.
Well, no, but I mean, that very first series, especially the first year of it, when wonderful people were writing scripts for the thing, were just absolutely Law of One. And I was such a Trekkie. I was young in the 60s. I was just out of college, and I was part of the mass number of fans that wrote letters and kept them on the air for 3 years when there was a lot of energy to take them off the air after the first year. And so many people wrote that they kept them on, and the same thing for the third year. And after that, somehow or another, not enough people wrote, and they ended it despite us. But we did a good thing keeping it out as long as we did.
Well, we're very grateful to you, because then that also helped bring back the later series. Now, I watched the original series in the 60s and loved it, and watched it later on reruns. But when I mentioned doing the character curriculum with my son, it was The Next Generation and Voyager later. Yeah, and we didn't get into Deep Space Nine quite as much, and then the last one after that, we never got into that. But Voyager and Next Gen, that's some good stuff in there, let me tell you.
Excellent stuff,
that's some good stuff.
I agree.
You never got into
I agree with his face. I found it more difficult to get into Deep Space Nine, although I enjoy the characters.
Same here.
And I watched, what was the name of it? It was an
Enterprise.
Yeah, I watched Enterprise and enjoyed it. But I never bonded as I bonded with the earlier ones, especially Second Generation and Voyager.
I thought that was the Enterprise got a little too goofy. I quit watching when I saw the episode about the guy getting pregnant in his wrist.
That was a little, well.
I was like, they're going a little too goofy here. Anyway, okay, last question. Yeah, this is from The Eternal. So this has been on my mind quite a bit lately, and I'm not sure if it's been asked, so I'm doing so now. Ross stated that his, if he is a he, social memory complex began and developed on Venus. They said that they worked with the ancient Egyptians and sought to help the planet on other occasions. My question is, what about the other Egyptian deities? Did they also come from Venus? What about the gods of the other pantheons? How did they become involved with Earth? I'm also very curious if anything may be said about I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Tuatha De Dona, the peoples of the goddess Danu, or Druidic Fae people, who were said to have once colonized Ireland. This is from The Eternal.
Two different questions, but I'd be glad to answer both. First of all, Ra had nothing to do with the Ra that was the god. They chose that name because people would recognize it more easily and move right back to Egypt, which was the intent, just to basically identify them as that's the first thing that they did was work with the Egyptians. So it wasn't anything to do with Ra the god and that whole pantheon. And if you'll read about the god that Ra was, you'll find that it was a god of war. So, you know, they just picked the name. It had nothing to do with anything else. And apparently they'd already gotten some guff over it because they made a point of explaining that they were not to be identified with the gods. It was just probably, they didn't say stupid, but stupid. Stupid choice of names, because above this density there isn't any naming. You know, there's just the vibration, and people see that vibration, they know who you are. And they're able to do that with us. They don't need a name. But, you know, we can't do that. We need names. So they named us as we prefer. They gave us a name. As to the Tuatha De Danann, or the Fae, there's no question in my mind but that they and also the American Indians were into something of that eternal truth of the Law of One in their religion. I think that the Fae people of, you know, Avalon and Camelot and all of that myth lucked into, I will say, a very, very advanced religion, because theirs was a religion that honored the feminine. And when you honor the feminine principle, you're honoring energies of love, compassion. Think about how you think of a mother. You know, so comforting, so non-judgmental, as they gathers the child to her breast and says, "It's okay, honey. It's going to be all right." That energy of femininity, that strength, that all the beautiful things about the feminine. And with the Indians, they were working to, they had many gods, you would say, but the grandfather was the highest of the beings. And that was not so much because it was a feminine group, but because it was balanced in honoring all of nature. And one of the ways that I mentioned earlier of knowing the Creator is look to nature and see the Creator, and that's what they did. So you're looking at two various subcultures there that had a true piece of the truth. They had a beautiful, beautiful piece of the truth. And their system was a system full of light and love and tending towards the Law of One in the way that they honored the truth, and they understood magic. They understood polarity. They understood working to do everything to advance themselves on the path to positive polarity. And so did the Indians, working very, very hard to move towards honoring all that was good and noble and loving. So that's my own perception of the Tuatha De Danann and the American Indian culture. And I hope that helps. And you said, could that lead to a discussion about mythological deities? And I don't suppose it can this week, but yes, it certainly can. We need to pick up next week where we left off here.
I was just going to say, we'll have to... that can open up a whole another discussion, which we can do next week. So we just have a couple of minutes left. Did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
One thing. I think that those of Ra probably predated the warlike god Ra that is so much associated with Egyptians. But I think Ra came first in that 18,000 years ago, they had the Egyptians sort of in their sights, and they were attempting to work with them. They appeared in their skies but didn't land. And then 11,000 years ago, and that's 7,000 more years, they've been, you know, in contact in some way, probably through dreams, which is what the way they usually contacted people in cultures before they were able to contact Akhenaten in the 18th dynasty telepathically. So I think that there was a contact that grew over the years and eventually ended in their landing, and that the Egyptians very quickly ascribed powers to Ra that Ra did not appreciate. They didn't want to be seen as, you know, powerful gods that you had to obey and so forth. And their teachings were reserved for the rich and the powerful, so they found quickly a need to take their leave and to retire to the inner planes. But I think that for a very long time, they were in contact with the Egyptian culture in some fashion and were perceived by some and probably named later somehow. I don't know how the naming took place because they wouldn't have, I guess they could have done it through a dream, or they could have waited till the time of the Akhenaten. That I really don't know, but I think that their influence came before the negative connotations were attached to them, and then that because those connotations were attached to them, the, you know, their information was reserved for the powerful. Then they took their leave and were more mysterious after that.
And just to back what Jim's saying, after Akhenaten died, the priest took over and began to change Ra, and they finally renamed Ra as Amun-Ra. In later Egyptian dynasties, Wiki says Ra was merged with the god Horus as Ra Horakhti, or Ra, who is Horus of the two horizons, was believed to rule in all parts of the created world and was associated with a falcon and a hawk. That Amun-Ra was a prosperous god and a war god. Ra was simply identified as the sun god, the original Ra. But when we think of Ra these days, and we think of the Ra of the pantheon of Egyptian gods, we think of Amun-Ra after Heliopolis. So, you know, I think they use Ra as the sun god, but they had no control over what happened after Heliopolis, because it was Akhenaten who formed Heliopolis, who built Heliopolis, who kept that image of Ra as otherworldly, as the god of one, all is one. You know, he was teaching basically the law of one. But it didn't last, you know. It didn't last. It was too unassociated with anything that the priests could get a hold of to make money from. It was a Ra of the people, a Ra of initiation of everybody into a higher realization. And they didn't like that. So they made the pyramid that Ra built, or that Ra helped to build, instead of, as they pictured it, a place of healing and initiation for all, it became a place that the rich people could go to. And everything became smeared and darkened until the very nature of Ra changed from a sun god to a god connected with the hawk. And as you know, a hawk is an image of war. So it's really too bad.
Well, I've got a couple of follow-up questions, but I guess they're going to have to wait till next week. So anybody listening, I want to let you know we're going to have some good stuff next week. We're going to get more in-depth on a couple of things that Carl and Jim just mentioned about Ra landing and the pyramids. Going to have some follow-up questions on that. Okay, I think we're out of time, so thanks, Carl and Jim. I hope you guys have a great week. All right, you've been listening to LL. Okay, LL Research is in the now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. Please visit llresearch.org, which is the archive website. Check out the Law of One material, the channeling transcripts, publications, a lot of the stuff you can get for free. You can just download, and that's llresearch.org. Also, the community website, bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org, and you can submit questions and topics for the discussion on bringforth.org. We are here every Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. We'll be here next week. See you then.